I'm so excited to have Dan Hofmeister here today. Dan is the Senior Vice President of Brand Marketing at Bumblebee Seafood. Dan, welcome to CMO Pulse. I'm really excited for our conversation today.
Tanya, thank you so much. I'm honored to be here.
Brilliant. Well, we were chatting and, you know, I don't want our viewers to be too jealous, but how is it in San Diego today? Can you just give us a quick rundown? I need to live vicariously through you.
You know, Tanya, I hate to complain, but I actually just had to take my sweatshirt off a little bit. We're down to like 71 degrees and a little bit of a couple clouds in the sky. Yeah, it's a little breezy. I'm sorry, Tanya. It's a rough day here.
Yeah, I feel like that's slightly more tolerable now that it's approaching summer here on the East Coast. I feel like when it's winter and people are like, you know, I had to put on my hoodie last night and it was a little unsettling.
Brilliant.
Well, I mean, let's start with, you know, we've got so many exciting things going on. I know you had some recent big campaigns in 2020 that are flowing through to 2021. Tell us what's been happening at Bumblebee Seafoods and what should viewers be looking out for?
Yeah, I would say, Tanya, that we've been on a transformational journey for a couple years now. We have a new ownership team in place. We're looking further out into the long-term horizon, and we're redefining our purpose. Who do we want to be as a company? And at the end of the day, we want to create food that's inspired by the ocean, food that will nourish consumers' lives, food that is affordable, nutritious, accessible, really hitting on all those things that we're hearing consumers say they really want, but may have not really thought about tuna as being the answer to that. And so we're excited to connect with consumers in that way. And over the last year in 2020, we did launch a breakthrough campaign that we're exceptionally proud of, a campaign that we call Yes Bumblebee. We were thrilled to bring that to market in 2020 and begin to force reappraisal of tuna, getting tuna back on people's radar as that solution to meet some of those needs that we know consumers are saying they have.
And one of the themes that, you know, if people haven't seen it, and we can, you know, we'll probably want to show it here too, but there are some great themes around working out or around, you know, fast solutions if you want to make a quick, interesting meal and others. But I felt like the workout one was really notable because you open on it and you think you're in, you know, maybe some sort of like, maybe it's like a sporting goods or something like that. So it was a real reverse of, I think, what viewers expect. How did you get to that? What was the reaction? Can you talk a little about that?
Yes, absolutely. And Tanya, when we look at our category and you think of our brand and all the many benefits that we have, we are very portable. We're protein packed. We're nutritious. We're affordable. We have all of these things, but we aren't always thought of in that light. And so what we really wanted to do was create that, we called it the rug pull moment, where you let your mind start thinking as you're seeing this spot that, okay, I've seen this before. I've seen this sports commercial before. I've seen this outdoor enthusiast commercial before.
I know what I'm going to expect, right? Yeah.
Exactly. And your mind starts going there and you're ready to get to the climax of what that solution is. And all of a sudden at the last minute, you see that, wow, there's Bumblebee tuna. And the goal is to really force that reappraisal. No one's ever really thought about tuna in the context of a workout routine as that portable protein to refuel you, to drive you to your next, you know, peak performance. Another spot that we had in our montage of spots that we used was a spot called Trailblazer, where it featured a hiker that is out on a mountain and you're expecting an energy bar or a Patagonia jacket or something like that. But no, it's tuna as the solution to fuel that person through their workout.
Or well, you with think of spork. It. You can't forget the spork.
With a spork. Absolutely. Exactly. That can be the difference between making it out, you know? And same thing with, you know, our canned product. You know, canned tuna has been around for over 120 years. And so how do you get people to start thinking about it differently? And part of the way we did that was, you know, thinking about a fast food type occasion where you're, you know, hearing this dramatic voiceover, you see, you know, this beautiful romance food and you're expecting, you know, Carl's Jr., Burger King, whatever. And then all of a sudden you see a guy making a tuna melt at home that provides that equally craveable and delicious, convenient experience. And so, yes, that's been a big part of it is trying to not just tell people about the benefits of tuna, but really surprise them and link the benefits we provide to things that we know consumers are trying to solve for in their daily lives.
And how much of, you know, the campaign launched in the latter part of 2020, was that something that you thought up as the world was adjusting and society was adjusting to COVID? Was this something you were already thinking through? Like, can you tell me a little bit about what your strategy looked like last year and how things, you know, potentially shifted?
Well, it's fascinating. And that's such a powerful question, Tanya. Going to the end of 2019, we had landed on a campaign strategy that we intended to go live early in 2020. And that campaign looked and felt quite a bit different than where we landed with the final release of Yes, Bumblebee. We had intended to be very outdoor focused, creating social buzz, all of those types of things. And then right as we're getting ready to release, we found ourselves in the middle of a pandemic where clearly an out-of-home type experience is not going to be the best way to connect with your consumers at that time. So we did pivot very, very quickly, recognizing that we're going to need to adjust our entire media approach, cater this more to an audience that we know is going to be at home and is now filling their pantries with product like ours. And we just needed to change the tonality, the media execution, all of that, to really fit what we felt consumers were looking for at that time. And I'm sure we'll get into it, but clearly that created some challenges producing an entirely new campaign in that environment on such a quick turnaround.
Yeah, I mean, let's dive into that right now, because that's a great follow-on conversation, because there's one part which is the strategy and then there's the execution of it. And, you know, it was really nicely produced. So certainly you weren't shooting it on iPhones in someone's house. Like, how did you break that down? Like, how did you make sort of decisions around that?
Yeah, it was quite an obstacle. We knew that TV was going to be the right media for us for a lot of different reasons. But as we looked around the country, nowhere in the US was available for production in any form, way, shape, or form. And so then we had to start scouring the globe. Where could we potentially produce these spots? And we landed on your native land of Australia.
Yes.
And so it was a remarkable experience that was unique to myself, my team, our agency partners. None of us have ever approached a production in this way, but there were only two areas in the world that were open for production that we could find at that time. And Australia was one of them. And so we found ourselves doing talent screening, director auditions, all of that remotely. And then the actual production of the spots took place in Australia. And so you can picture this, Tanya, in San Diego, it's 2 a.m. We've got our brand team watching via Zoom what's happening on set as someone is actively hiking up a mountain in Australia and eating a pouch of tuna. I mean, it was a remarkable experience, but it worked out perfectly and was a great experience for everyone involved.
Was there, and maybe you wouldn't pick a 2 a.m. shoot for everyone, you know, if you could choose it in the future, but was there anything that you felt that you learned going through that you're going to bring into your marketing practice going forward? Because I know one of the things that's come up in some of these conversations is a readjustment of what people believed was possible. So I'm curious to know if you had any sort of aha moments around that.
Completely. That changed our perspective entirely. Had you asked me at the end of 2019 if I would ever consider producing a spot without being physically there in a director chair type venue, I would have said absolutely not. Now we clearly know that it's possible. And that's opened up our aperture so much. It's made us rethink our own talent and expand the aperture of having people around the country and at some point, maybe even around the globe as talent to support our business. So it really has opened our eyes to what is possible. We proved that we can do this well and do it remotely. And it just opens up the spectrum of options so much for us.
Oh, that's incredible. And you mentioned, you know, you sort of rallied around this hashtag, yes, Bumblebee. And I know that's something that's showing up still on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and many other platforms. Can you talk a little about the role of social overall, but maybe specifically with respect to this campaign and how you've been continuing to keep the conversation going?
Yes. So there were, throughout 2020, there were two main work streams for our team. And one of them was truly Yes Bumblebee. That was kind of the anchor. But a complementing aspect of this that is maybe less visible was what we called our digital infrastructure project. And that really got down to the heart of recognizing that in order for us to maximize the impact of this outbound media, we need to be able to have the effective platforms to maintain that relationship with our consumers, a thing that we hadn't really done a great job of in the past, to be perfectly honest. And so this was an opportunity for us to get really serious about looking at our brand and our product. And we put a pretty lofty ambition out there that we wanted to be a best-in-class digital brand. And we started taking steps in that direction to start making that possible. And as we're seeing, you know, we've started to create that connectivity between, you know, mass media and what's happening on social. And it's something that we know we're going to keep evolving and are excited to build on for the future. But it's critical, critical part of where we are, what's made our campaign so successful, and what we think we'll need to be successful into the future.
Turning a little now to you and to your story. So I know you've been with Bumblebee Seafood now for some time, and I'm sure there's been some really exciting evolutions there. You were at Hormel beforehand. Can you tell me a little bit about, when you reflect back, what has been the most influential decision that you think you've made in your career?
The most influential decision is going to be the most influential is going to be a challenge, but I'll tell you the biggest decisions that I've made. I've found that they all have to do with people. They really have to do with people. And I think about people that I've hired, going back to early in my career at Hormel and where I am now at Bumblebee. Those decisions that I've made to bring certain people into the team that will carry the mantle of the brand that I, you know, see as a complement to my strengths and addressing some of my weaknesses and opportunities for improvement, bringing the right people and the right talent on board to flourish and to help our brand go to the next level has really been the biggest impact, most impactful decisions that I believe I've made in my career.
What do you look for?
You know, I look for somebody that, first of all, exemplifies our corporate values. Values is fundamental to everything that we do at Bumblebee. We're all about people first, and that means a lot. Making sure that people do treat people well and in the way that that we want to be treated, and that's important not just for a team functionality, but it also shows itself or manifests itself in the way that we connect with our consumers. We aren't just, you know, marketing trying to push product on people. We're trying to create relationships with our consumers, and to have that, we need someone that embodies that people first mentality. So clearly, that's my first and foremost look. Anyone that I look at bringing onto the team, and then second, it's really that complementary talent that I look for. It's easy. It's tempting at times to find someone that looks like me, thinks like me, acts like me. But really, it's pushing ourselves to think, I need someone that's very different than me, that can bring a lot of insight that's different than mine to the table so that we get a more holistic, comprehensive solution to meeting our consumers' needs.
On your first sort of screener, if you will, of people first, because that's important. I think it's, you know, it's something that I'd say many executives or many people hiring aspire to. How can you tell? Like, do you have specific things? Like, how do you, because if someone's in an interview concept, like it's sort of hard to identify candidly someone who's going to be jerky or someone who's going to, you know, misbehave under pressure. Like what are some of the things that you've learned over time that you look for?
Well, to your point, Tanya, that's incredibly challenging at any time. And that's been especially challenging over the last year. And throughout the course, I've ended up hiring people that I still haven't physically met in person, which is remarkably challenging. And So as you're having a Zoom conversation with someone for the first time and you're trying to pull some of that out, that is a big challenge. And for me, it really starts with a filter on, you know, what do you care about? What is it that makes you tick? What is it that you're about? And pretty quickly you get a sense for what people value as they start to impromptu answer that type of question. And it kind of leads you in a direction as to whether you think this will be a good fit or not, at least in my opinion.
I remember reading somewhere and it was hilarious. And I was like, it's kind of genius, but I can't imagine ever implementing it. Where someone was like, you know, you need to be a little sloppy in your interview process to like almost give them a reason to get mad at you. And I was like, okay, that sounds great, but then you might also lose really great talent if you do that. So it's a big gamble around how far you want to take that, right?
I'm going to write that one down. I have not heard that, but I really, really like it.
Experience for you, and if you get snippy with me, then I know that you will get snippy.
That is brilliant. I love it.
So, you know, the next time anyone's interviewing, it could just be evil genius at work.
That's right. That's right.
So the second thing that you talk about sort of speaks to a diversity of experience, a diversity of talent and of ideas. On that topic of diversity, you know, we went through, I guess, a huge social reckoning last year. Did that shift anything in how you're thinking, or can you talk a little bit about how you think about diversity from your seat?
Yeah, diversity is absolutely critical on all aspects. And I think it's so critical, just looking at the makeup of our consumer base. If we aren't reflecting the views, the ideals, the perspectives of our consumer base, then we aren't going to do a great job of being relevant and connecting with them. And one of the benefits, if you look at some of the benefits over the really hard conversations that happened over this past year, is that this has forced some really tough conversations. It's opened a lot of our eyes to, you know, potential blind spots that we should be thinking about, really pressing issues that matter a lot to our consumers. Again, you think about people first. That's really, really important to understand where all consumers are at in their journey, in life in general, how they see the world. And the more we appreciate that and understand that, the more likely we're going to be able to be relevant to them as they go about their daily lives.
Well, and that touches on sort of an important theme for many of these discussions, which is sort of staying close and keeping a pulse on what's happening in culture. Mm-hmm. Can you speak a little about, and I'm sure, you know, last year posed sort of unique challenges of staying up to date because your consumer's changing, you're changing, you're working from home, your team, so there's this whole, you know, wash of stuff. But can you talk a little about how you personally as a marketer keep close to your customers and how you keep a pulse on, you know, on what's sort of happening and how you need to be thinking differently?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the core, understanding and staying close to our consumers and where they're at, being relevant to what's relevant to them is really important. I'll just give you a very interesting example of how that's played out for us last year. I was at my son's soccer game and actively coaching when I got an urgent text message from someone on my team saying that, hey, there's a social conversation that we need to get involved in. I'm like, okay, well, let's look into this. And it happened to be right in the middle of the 2020 election campaign process. And apparently President Trump had been speaking at a rally and mentioned something about protesters using canned tuna as a weapon being thrown, and happened to mention specifically Bumblebee as the brand of choice in those types of conversations. And immediately that raised a lot of red flags. And clearly this is a conversation that's very relevant, that a lot of people have eyes on, that a lot of our consumers are engaged in for a lot of different reasons. And we had a choice in that moment. Do we speak into this? Do we pull back? How do we approach this? And I'm really pleased with the way we stepped into it. At the end of the day, we did speak into it with a very simple phrase of just saying, eat them, don't throw them. And what we saw was just remarkable response where there was something that was so divisive, potentially divisive, that ended up becoming this unifying conversation. We were trending in the top 10 on Twitter for a couple days as people were talking about this. And it was just an exciting time to be part of a potentially divisive conversation and start to bring people together in a way that offered a little bit of levity. But also being, you know, very, very relevant and approachable to the conversation at hand.
Yeah, and it touches on something that I think is important to also speak to, which is, you know, you talked about you and your team have been on this mission to sort of relook at your purpose and, you know, relook at, who you are as a company and what you mean. Does that become a guiding principle when things like this happen? Like, what was your framework? Because I know, you know, it used to be that the safe thing to do whenever there was anything divisive or anything that was sort of a crisis was to go dark, right? It was just ignore it, pretend it doesn't happen, and just it'll go away. And I think that doesn't seem to be a great option these days because the consumer does demand more. How did what you were already doing as a company inform this? Like, how did you kind of get prepared for something like that? Because, I mean, that's not, no matter how much you pre-plan, you cannot plan for that, right? Like, the likelihood that that's going to happen is quite low.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you're right. In those moments, silence is deafening. If you don't speak into that when you're actively called out, that's a problem. And for us, because we went through that exercise of really understanding what is our purpose in the world? What do we believe in? What do we stand for? That made responding to that situation and other situations so much easier. You know, at the core, we create food that's from and inspired by the ocean. And we do that for our consumers. We want to nourish our people's lives through the power of the ocean. And that's so incredibly important to us. I mentioned two big words, food and people. We're talking about food. We're not talking about units. We're not talking about cases. We're talking about food that goes into people's body and fuels them, that offers value, that nourishes their lives. And that word people, we need people at the center of all of this. And as we thought about our response to that particular instance, it was, okay, how do we channel that appropriately? We don't want to come across as a legalistic bureaucrat or anything like that. We're dealing with people that, you know, have relationships, and you want to have that act in a way that creates that relational connectivity versus pushing something at them. If that makes sense. And so that purpose, those values have really guided us in that discussion to address those types of conversations.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful context, because I think it avoids too much hesitation when stuff really happens, because the last time to prepare for a crisis is when it's happening, right? So
absolutely. Yes.
Can you talk a little about your approach as a marketer? And I'd say on one end, for purposes of this question, you've got, you know, incredibly data-led, you know, doing everything by the data and sort of creative flows from there. And on the other end, you've got, I'm entirely creative-led. Maybe there's data, maybe there's not, but I'm very, very ideas-based and sort of gut-based. Where do you sit on that continuum? How would you describe yourself?
Yeah, really great question. I look at myself and my background. I'm incredibly analytical. I grew up being trained, classically trained at a Fortune 500 CPG that was very data oriented, very focused on having the right business case tied to data before you make a clear decision. And, you know, as I look at myself now, I'm still that way, but I would define myself a little bit differently as a marketer. First, I would say purpose-led above and beyond all else. And it does go back to that desire to nourish lives through the power of the ocean and letting that drive the decision process. At times, that may lead me down an analytical route. At times, that may lead me down more of a creative route. And so I think that's been priority number one. And then as far as going beneath the surface there, I continue to rely very practically on how data has played out. It's kind of interesting, Tanya. I've gotten to the point where I've now begun mapping from not just top of funnel execution down to point of conversion, but top of funnel investments all the way down to point of conversion to actual fish needed to support this, and trying to bridge that data gap from the top of the funnel all the way down through our supply chain. And
so also thinking from a supply chain, is that also a sustainability element to that?
100%. Absolutely. We talk about kind of three pillars of our business: people, product, planet. And the product side is clearly core to the marketing world, but that planet side is equally important. And understanding the sustainable side of the equation, we need to protect our oceans. We need to champion our oceans, and we'll continue to do so. And understanding that link between what we're doing from a brand marketing perspective all the way down to the sustainability side of the equation is absolutely critical for us.
And when you were, you talked about the sort of shift that you made with the campaigns that you'd already pre-planned. And you also talk about them being a somewhat surprising reverse. Can you talk a little bit about risk and how you assess that, and how, you know, anything that you've learned about selling through potentially, you know, I don't want to say it's a big controversial idea, but it wasn't something that people might expect from you or from your category. How did you balance that, and how did you sort of have those conversations internally?
Yeah, one of the mantras that we've tried to embrace is that playing it safe is not safe, especially when it comes to a category and a brand that's as established as ours, one that's been around for 120 years that fits a very functional role in people's lives, but for a lot of intents and purposes, it's kind of just fallen off their radar. And so we could continue down the path of the safe route of, let's just talk more about recipes. Recipes are great. That's really helpful. But to really force that reappraisal, we knew that playing it safe would not be safe. And so we did lean out beyond our comfort zone, beyond my personal comfort zone in many ways. But we did it for the sake of really being aggressive in trying to accomplish what it is that our ultimate goal is. We want people to begin to see how tuna, this reliable item that's been there forever, how it can fit their very contemporary needs right now. And we really felt that this was the most effective way to start doing that.
Oh, I love that. And I feel like playing it safe is not safe could almost just be the theme for the world right now, right? Like anything that you thought you could just count on and that was the safe bet is like the opposite is true now. So it's very unsettling. It's a lot of work, right? You
know, it is. It really is.
This change thing, I don't know. This transformation thing, I mean.
Yes, it's exhausting.
last question on that piece was, you know, you mentioned that you sort of knew that television would be an important platform for this most recent campaign. Have you shifted your platform mix much in the last year? I know, you know, there's been a big rise in streaming, like television ratings have continued to be challenged. Have you shifted how you've been thinking about your mix?
We have, yes. So in the middle of the pandemic, we did lean heavily on TV and for a couple of reasons. You know, we knew more people were going to be at home. We saw TV consumption spiking, all of that. And we also really wanted our campaign to be focused at the top of the funnel. We wanted to force that reappraisal, that both awareness as well as consideration at the high level. And we're less concerned with the lower funnel execution at that time, as we were struggling to stay in stock and lots of people weren't interested in being in store for very long. That was the strategy that we deployed at that time. Now that the world has started to evolve and shift a little bit, as we look towards July, where we're going to be back on air a bit more aggressively, you're going to see a much more comprehensive funnel approach where we're going to continue and select markets to have TV in the mix, but leaning much more heavily than we did last go around into the digital space and being more focused on that space and even getting down towards that point of purchase with, you know, retailer media and getting all the way down to that point of purchase to ensure that full coverage throughout the purchase funnel.
Got it. And so last question for you. If you could go back to the beginning of your career and offer yourself one piece of career advice, leadership advice, anything, what would that advice be?
Oh, wow. I would say just have an open mind. Have an open mind. I look back at earlier stages in my career and I know how deeply I labored over specific decisions and found myself set in my ways in a number of different areas. And as I've grown as a leader, as a person, I just see so much more room to broaden my perspective, bring in diverse opinions, bring in diverse thoughts, and just be open to new ways of doing, new ways of thinking, and taking some risks, trying things, doing some things a little bit differently. And, you know, the world we live in today is obviously quite a bit different than when I started. But you look at things like digital media and being able to test and learn where you don't necessarily need all the answers. You can actively take action and learn in the process to inform future decisions. And it's just a very different mindset than when I started my career. And I would speak to my younger self and say, get ready for that.
I love it. Terrific. Well, so great chatting with you, Dan. Thank you so much for joining.
Tanya, thank you so much. Really appreciate the time.